This is episode number 111 of the Paleo Women Podcast. Welcome to the Paleo Women Podcast. I'm your co-host, Noelle Tarr, a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer. And with me is my partner in crime, Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature. This show is the place to be if you're a fan of moderately amusing banter and uninhibited real talk relating to health, nutrition, fitness, body image, and just about everything in between. While hanging out with us, please remember the information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should not be used in place of medical advice or treatment. Now, let's have some fun. It's never happened before. I've never screwed that one up. It's been a bit of a week.
Do they say, or do you get brain foggy when you're pregnant? Is that a thing?
I don't know. Everybody calls it pregnancy brain. I'm like, I'm not disabled because I'm pregnant, guys. it's more that there is so much on your mind that there's like 18 million things going on, you know, in general. Mm-hmm. And so then this is like piled on top. And I think it's more, you know, when your brain is in 18 different places, it's not effectively in the one that you're trying to get it to be in or at.
Yeah. By the way, everybody, if we didn't leave it in the recording, Noelle opened the podcast with, this is
gibberish.
Podcast.
We did not leave it in.
Okay.
But
she forgot that we were called the Paleo Women. Podcast. Bye.
So how is your, I'm anxious to hear the craziness of the day for you and the traveling and all the things. Where were you?
Paris.
Yay. How did that go?
I know, from the end of last podcast to the beginning of this one, I've been in Paris. I just walked in my door like 20 minutes ago.
Oh my.
Did you say why?
No, I said, yeah. Oh, I said, oh my, that's a long time.
A very long time. And I just, you know, y'all will recall that I just decided to up and go visit this guy I had just met. And his apartment is, you know, the size of a shoebox,
Oh, God.
You know, because it's downtown Paris. And I lived with him for 6 days. I was actually supposed to just stay for 3 or 4, and I kept extending it. Because it was, he has some talents, I will say that. So, yeah, so we had a really lovely time. Very friendly and getting to know each other and then a little bit more, which was really nice. And then today, I had to come home so I could podcast with Noelle. Sit and eat a bag of apples. Thank God. I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast yet, but I'm kind of getting over my apple phase.
No.
Yeah. I keep buying them, but not eating them. There's just like 5 bags of apples in my cabinet right now.
That's funny.
Anyway.
I'm definitely not over it. We have like bags of pink ladies.
I think if I could get Fuji's here, it would be a different story, but I can't. So.
That makes a huge difference. I would not be eating apples if all I had were, I don't know, Gasp, Galas, or Honeycrisp.
I get Galas. That's what I get. I know. Settling. Talk about settling. Okay, so today I got on the train. The train from Paris to London is very fast. You know, it's 2.5 hours, goes under the ocean. You know, it's just like a speedy train. But when I got here, I was supposed to just hop on the subway, and I'm just one stop, like literally one stop, maybe two, depending on what line I take, from the major train station, King's Cross. It's the one in Harry Potter, my house. So, but I got here at, you know, rush hour time, 5:30, and the underground system here is just nuts. Like, and take any city in the United States, including New York, and multiply it. You know, it's huge. And it's full of people, shoulder to shoulder, and everybody's, like, moving kind of slowly. I'm like, I should have taken an Uber. You know, that's all I can think. But I'm like, I'm in there. There's no getting out once you get in. So I like get through, through the ticket taker, and I'm on the escalator going down, and I see that there's a huge crowd down there. Right. And I've been on it before where they limit the number of people coming through the tills because they want to prevent overcrowding, on the station. And I start thinking, holy crap, they should be limiting this. And people got to the bottom of the escalator before people moved out of the way at the bottom. And so there started to be a pile of people at the bottom of the escalator, just like literally just piling on top of each other. So someone hit the emergency stop, thank God, because the escalators in London are so long, right? There's 100 people on the escalator, and everybody, like, you know, lurches forward, jerks to a stop. Fortunately, nobody fell.
Oh, gosh.
But then we're all like, okay, this is normal. And we keep walking, like, you know, slowly, you know, like penguins or, you know, huge pack towards where we're going, trying to, you know, pass each other to get to our various lines. And a few minutes later, an alarm bell starts going off because when the person emergency stopped the escalator, an emergency situation was triggered, and then everybody had to leave the station.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's like huge and sprawling underground and just full of thousands of people. And so we all, like, you know, herded our way above ground, and then it's rush hour in London, and there's an extra few thousand people stranded downtown trying to get home. So there were no Ubers, there were no cabs, you couldn't get on a bus because the bus drivers would pull up and not let anybody on because they were too full. So then I decided to walk home, and my map was like being really imprecise, maybe because everybody was like on their phones. So I ended up going way out of my way and walking for like an hour with all my bags from Paris. And I haven't, you know, slept in a few days, and I'm really glad that you gave me some extra time. Because I wanted to do this earlier, and they're like, no, let's go for 3. I'm like, okay, fine, 3 is fine. it's 8 for me, 8 p.m. And it's really good I had the extra time because I just made it. And that's my story.
That was such a fun story. I was like imagining all the things. That's amazing.
Okay.
Thank you.
I tried to like use compelling imagery, you know, like penguins on an escalator.
Penguins. I'm just imagining people coming down the escalator. And just like piling up, you know, like just like penguins do.
Yeah.
Know, like, you know how they slide on their bellies? Like, I'm just seeing everybody topple over on their belly.
Well, you know, like all I could think was, good thing these people are British, because they were so orderly about it. You know, there's a lot of spontaneous order here. I can't even imagine, like, in the States, what would have happened if an underground facility like that had to be emergency evacuated.
People would have been crying and like
stampeding and dying.
Yes.
And like Walmart on Thanksgiving.
Yes, exactly. I will say that's what, in Japan, it's the same way too. Other cultures have it down. Literally, you go up one side of the stairs, down one side of the stairs. There is so much order, and I'm sure it's not surprising, because Japan, but there's so much order to, like, the culture in general. And then you come back here, I'm sure that when they visit, like, you know, the Japanese,
it's so
here,
frustrating.
They're probably so frustrated and like, these stupid people, what are you doing? You know, like, they'd probably
be nice. I feel that way. In my experience, on escalators, you stand on the right and you walk on the left. Yes. That's like the rule,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
I've actually read a book about small developed island nations, focusing on Britain and Japan and the similarities that they have. In part, people hypothesize, sociologists hypothesize, that the small nature of the, you know, the island means that people have to sort of spontaneously order themselves and have these unspoken rules. It just sort of develops naturally. Yeah, which I find really interesting.
That's super interesting. Yeah, because I'm gonna say I'm a walker on the escalator, and I really appreciate that about Japan. Was like, we always were able to just kind of like walk up, and everybody just stayed to the right. It happens endlessly here, but it's just like people stand right in the middle, and you're like, excuse me, can I get around you? And they're like astonished that you want to walk up an elevator or escalator.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I'm like, what? I have legs.
Yeah. I'm trying to get somewhere on time.
Yeah.
It's usually my goal.
So wow. How are you?
So fun. I'm doing okay. You know, this has been a challenging week. I've had some stuff happen with my business, and that's just been fun. And then I'm growing, which is a good thing. But it's also like a totally different feeling and sensation. And I've had these weird feelings and cramps, and it got so bad on this past weekend that I was like, I didn't know what, if I should go to the emergency room, if like something serious was happening. And so I called my midwife. Luckily, you know, they're always on call. And I was like, this is just getting worse and worse. And I don't know, like, if this is something that I should go to the ER about or get checked out. And she was like, take a hot shower, put your feet up and see if it starts to subside. And it did, thankfully. I just like stood in the shower. But even throughout the night, like, and then the next day I had spasms. Like, there's a lot of ligaments going on. There's a lot of ligaments down there in general. There's one in particular called the round ligament, and it's kind of, you know, it stretches, and it was twitching like an eye twitch, like constantly. And especially when she would kick, it would kick and would set off a twitch. And so like all day it was twitching. And I was like, I'm just going to try not to think about this. But intuitively to me, that was definitely not my uterus. That was like a ligament. And so I think it, you know, I'm hashtag growing pains. Like I think that's what I'm dealing with, but it's still a mental total like game for me. And it's really hard when you, because of course you want to Google search. Not a smart thing to do when you're, because all of a sudden you think you're going into labor, but that didn't happen. so luckily, so it's been you know, mentally and emotionally, there's been a lot of anxiety this week, but I was very thankful to get through everything and now be kind of back to normal and working.
Holy crap!
On the other things that I need to be working on.
You're a champion. Work does, you know, it's so hard. I find it really unfortunate. I just, life happens, and I wish that work, you know, could sort of work around it a little better. That would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's hard. This week I lost a girl that has been, a woman that's been helping me. She is pregnant and about to, you know, give birth, which is great. But the same day, I also had my virtual assistant who I was training go completely AWOL on me. Literally didn't, like, just not respond. Like, I hadn't heard from her in a week and a half. I had reached out to her. My husband had reached out to her. The company we used to help find her reached out to her, and we were like, what's going on? And then she emailed us back and was like, like, kind of just acted like it was not a big deal. And I was like, this is kind of a big deal. So we actually sent her an email. Sorry, I'm getting pretty detailed here, but we sent her another email. My husband did, because my husband's, you know, works for me. My husband sent her another email and was like, hey, this is what we need from you. Sorry, you know, we want to make sure we're communicating and we're on the same page. And she didn't get back to us. So, like, literally she's just completely gone, and the company was like, you need to cut ties immediately and change all your passwords. So based on like what she had said to them and her like lack of attention to detail and like not responding, to me it was like, is this just me? Am I like do I require, like, because I, of course, like, I didn't, like, not to sound cocky, but I didn't get here by being like mediocre. You know what I mean? I didn't build a business off of like hoping to be like standard and mediocre. And so, like, you know, I'm like, are my expectations too high? Do I just expect people to be like me? Like, what is going on? And so it was very validating for the company to be like, you need to cut ties immediately and change all your passwords. So that was a bit of a stressful situation. As you know, you've been in a similar situation where you're like frantically like, oh my gosh, all of my stuff. So I changed everything. Luckily, I don't think she has any ill intent. I think she's
not.
But anyway, so literally like months of work of hopefully having a person be somebody who could really help me long term is just poof gone. So I'm hiring. So I'm sure everybody has seen that little announcement that I made, and I'm hopefully going to be going through some resumes and stuff and getting some help, because when I have a baby, I can't run a business like I can right now, you know? So that's my thing, is like, I need to be able to manage, shift some of the tasks over and trust that people can handle things, specifically things that are really important to be done immediately, like, you know, product returns and stuff. If somebody's like, hey, this wasn't, you know, what I wanted or whatever, can I get my money back? Like, they're not going to want to wait 2 weeks. And I'm pretty responsive on email, so I expect the same thing. So that was my main thing is like, hey, you know, if a customer, if I'm emailing you and you can't get back to me within a week and a half, like if I'm going to trust you to handle my customer emails, like, don't think so. Like, I'm going to have a bunch of irate people. Like, hey, I emailed you a week and a half ago. So yeah. So, all of that fell into my lap lovely this week, which is why I completely forgot the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? So it's been a fun week. We have some really, I'm not going to even ask you if you have anything to say or to mention about Paleo for Women.
Great.
Great. I have, we have some really good questions, and we have one in particular. We're just going to get right into the nitty gritty. So with our first question, so I say we just go ahead on in. Are you ready?
I just saw the second paragraph. I'm so ready.
Okay, good. Question number one is from Andrea. I want to thank you both from the bottom of my heart for what you do. I've never heard women talk about our bodies and self-love and body acceptance like you do, along with some other events in my life and self-awareness. By the grace of God, you have quite literally saved my life and in turn quite literally saved my marriage. I have been able to change my mindset about so many things, which has changed my attitude and the way I carry myself and go through life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So my questions, attempt if you dare. Is it normal to have pain after sex? I'm almost always very sore and tender afterwards. Also, when my husband uses his hands, it seems to dry me out. And then continuing anything afterwards is painful. Second question, is there such a thing as too much fat in your diet? Both of these are really just... I'm excited.
Very meaty question.
Yeah. I'm currently eating a FODMAPS/Candida paleo diet on my own. I have not been able to see a physician about my IBS type issues. I feel like I'm going a little crazy with such few carbs. My body and mind seem to like high carb diets, but my gut does not. And so I have been supplementing with a higher fat, with higher fat content. For example, breakfast could include 2 to 3 eggs, some sort of protein, a smoothie with nut butter and peanut butter. Oh, nut milk and peanut butter, and blueberries with whipped coconut cream. Thank you again for all you do. Keep saving lives. Apples, #, I can't eat apples, flowers. Team Snapdragon, island mate okay. Team Stephanie, because once boom. We get off the island, I'll have learned how to dance. Power animal, humpback whale, because the mama, once she has a calf, will sacrifice her life. She will not eat for 6 to 8 months while they migrate from warm to cold water, all while being the source of her life, of life for her calf with milk. Talk about sacrificial love. Very cool.
Very cool.
Okay.
Boy, do we want to start with fat or doing it?
Sex.
Okay, we'll start with sex.
Great subject line, I think she said. She said, too much fat and sex? It was like, put it together. I was like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So... is it normal to have pain after sex? That would depend on how you define normal. Is it necessary? No. is it common? Again, that depends on how you define common. It happens for some people sometimes. There's a lot of variables here that we don't really know about. You didn't tell us much about your sex life. So, it's hard to guess exactly where the problem is coming from. I would say no, like some soreness I think is, completely, natural and fine, you know, to sort of feel some sort of, muscle tension or stretching or whatever days or hours afterwards, depending on how vigorously you've been going at it. But yeah, a few things. Hands and dryness. Yes, I think this is a real thing. Sex can do this too, especially for women who, you know, aren't particularly well lubricated. And this can vary depending on the time of the month. You know, women tend to be more lubricated the most, of course, during ovulation, and then more in the second half of the menstrual cycle, as estrogen and progesterone levels are, you know, kind of up and down. So pay attention to that. I would suggest more than anything, looking into investing in a good lube. I have heard though I actually have not tried using coconut oil.
Why have you not tried it?
Are you one of the people who's told me to do it?
yes. Team coconuts over here. Team coconut.
I don't because I never have anybody over to my place. I guess
that'll do it.
So funny because it's so true. I can't remember the last time. Anyway, so try a lube. You know, I also want to talk. I want to draw some carbohydrates into this conversation because carbohydrates are really helpful, actually, for the body producing mucus. So maybe figuring out the gut stuff and learning how to get some carbs in, or figuring out if there are some carbs that work for you, to just try really hard to get them in your diet. You know, it won't just help with lubricating your reproductive insides, but also like your skin can be really important to help your body stay moist, so to speak. So that's that. Pain after sex. So it depends. I guess there's a few different types of pain that we're talking about. If we're talking about dryness pain, I just addressed that. If we're talking about pain from width and or length, if we're talking about intercourse, that can happen. You know, sometimes you find yourself with a lover or a husband or what have you, whose body is a little bit more substantially equipped than your body would prefer. If that's the case,
such politically correct language there. That was great.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
I thought it was pretty eloquent, yeah, actually, and very on the spot.
Yes.
For the record.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot you can do about that except communicate and work together and try to find ways to have sex that don't hit sensitive spots for you. I have been with people before who were maybe a bit too long for the sake of my cervix. And so you have to sort of figure out ways and positions and angles and depth of thrusting that can work for both of you. I think that that's probably possible, but it's going to take some talking. And of course, you know, going a little bit slowly at first or what have you can help. You know, taking it gently and helping your body work its way up. But I wouldn't force that on yourself. I think you can find ways to do it that feel more comfortable for you. I'm not sure if you know things about this that I don't.
I would have to say that being very, very sore and tender afterwards shouldn't probably be your normal if it's... Well, this is what I would say. Has this been going on for like a long time? Has this been happening with you and your husband consistently and regularly? And this has always been the thing. This has always been the thing, like from day one. Then it sounds like it's more of a physical, mechanical issue, like Stephanie was saying. And so, you know, again, communication would be great. Going slower about things, doing different positions. There's definitely going to be, I mean, I don't have a long persistent issue like this, but I can tell you that when there's certain times during the month, certain times where whatever, I can't explain it, but certain positions are not going to be comfortable. And I'm like, yeah, no, not doing that tonight. And so I think that, you know, you just, communication is key on that. But if this is something that has started to happen more like in the recent past, maybe as, the whole FODMAPS candida issue started happening, that's something to think about and dig into a little bit further. Maybe it's because of the fact that, you know, you have some major gut issues going on that changes your hormonal your hormonal balance in general. So your cycles are a little bit off and your ability to kind of have natural lubrication is kind of decreased. And so it might be more correlated with the dryness and the fact that, because you also mentioned that, you know, that's something that's new and occurring, you know, more regularly. I think that we could solve that hopefully by having more of a holistic approach, you know, focusing on when did that start happening? Did it start happening when you had some of these gut issues? And then focusing more on the gut issues and using a really good lube while you're in the process of, you know, healing. And I think that, yes, please, coconut oil. I don't ever, like... trying to see where to go with this. Using your hands. Okay, so hands leading to dryness. I mean, you know, sure, that could definitely lead to dryness. But if there's no hand go penetration and it's only on top, you know, that may be better. And you're going to need a lube. Like, I don't usually have sex without lube. I'm going to be honest. It's just way more.
Oh, I always do.
Where there's always way more fun. Like, what? And it takes way longer. Like, and we use lube on each other. Like, skin on skin is just not really that enjoyable. So we're not going to be able to play with each other unless we have lube. So we literally, like, pretty much from the get-go. I mean, of course, yes, there's some warming up, but... I mean, we use lube right away, and coconut oil is amazing because it's, it doesn't, so like with like other jellies and stuff like that, it tends to get a little weird and like, with friction, it starts to get a little dry and sticky. And so coconut oil just doesn't do that at all. So please try the coconut oil. It's also, you know, just a wonderful moisturizing, oil. By the way, please don't, this is a special side note, please don't use coconut oil if you are using condoms as your method of birth control. You didn't tell us what you're using, but if you're trying to prevent a pregnancy and you're using condoms, do not use coconut oil. There is no literature on that that says yay or nay that coconut oil does work or doesn't work with latex or with condoms. So because of that, I would avoid it. We typically do. So I use we use condoms when... we are fertile, and we haven't used that in a while because obvs. So if we're preventing a pregnancy, we use the condoms and we use something else, a different lube. It's called Aloe Cabrera, and I'll link to that in the show notes. It's just an aloe vera-based lube. No nasties in it. Still works great, but we prefer coconut oil. So we use coconut oil when we're not using condoms and I am not fertile and we are preventing pregnancies. So I think, you know, try that, and then... hopefully that'll kind of resolve some of the dryness with the hands thing. So I'm maybe thinking like it just depends on when it started. Steph, is I may be thinking that like that if it was correlated with the gut issues and the FODMAPs and all the stuff, you know, it may all be kind of going hand in hand.
Yeah, it seems possible. You know, I think it's. Yeah. Related, but like you said, if this has sort of always been the case, then right. You're going to want to look into mechanics. I would go at it from both angles, of course.
Yeah. Communication is great.
Also, P.S., y'all always thought that Noelle's company was called Coconuts and Kettlebells because she likes to eat coconuts, but maybe, you know, I'm just saying.
Oh, Steffi. It's definitely because of that. Actually, one of my first posts was 20 weight uses for coconut oil, and like everybody loved it. It was like back in the day when everybody was not really familiar with coconut oil, and that was like number 7 or something. Though it's like definitely use it for lube. Way better. You're welcome. Okay, second question.
Second question. Wait.
No, second question of the first question.
Okay, we were just going to brush it under the rug.
Is there such a thing as too much fat in your diet?
No, I don't think so. But I think there's such a thing as having too little of carbohydrate and protein. So something that I and Noelle and I like to talk about a lot is this idea of making sure that you hit your minimum requirement of the macronutrients every day. Right. So I say at very minimum 50 grams of protein a day, probably more and more definitely for athletes. I like to say 100 grams of carbohydrate, which is 2 cups of rice, you know, and then 40 grams of fat. That all of that together, brings the total, the calorie total to less than 1,000. And then you can fill in the rest with whatever you want, which could be 100% fat if you want. That is how I like to do it. That's where I have sort of found my happy place, because every once in a while I teeter towards more fat, but I tend to be a more carby kind of person. And so long as I hit my fat minimums, you know, and I do, I hope I do in excess, but so long as I hit those, I'm feeling pretty good about my health. And I know that I'm taking care of all the systems in my body that need to be taken care of. And the human body is very flexible. You know, it can handle different macronutrients and what have you. Quite obviously, you know, you look at the literature, the documentation from traditional cultures, and some of them are very fat heavy, you know, like the Inuits and some island nations, you know, people eat mostly fruit. So it totally varies. And they, in all the cultures, they, you know, appear to be quite healthy. So I would encourage you to try to get your minimums, like I mentioned earlier. I don't know how much carb you're getting in there, but I think it could be pretty important if you can figure out how to do that. Yeah.
So I'm going to say something different here and say that, yes, you can get enough, too much fat if it's too much fat for you, right? So, like, if you feel sick because you're eating too much and your body's not digesting it properly and you're seeing, like, fattiness in your stools, then you're probably eating a little bit too much for your digestive system. And so you may not feel as great. Like, you're just not going to feel as great if that's not necessarily the ratio, the macronutrient ratio that's best for you. I just want to know how long you're doing the whole FODMAP candida thing, because really you want to keep that to a minimum of 6 to 8 weeks. So you remove all high and some, you know, mostly moderate FODMAP foods, which, again, we're talking mostly carbohydrates, and that's why you're probably so limited here. But removing all of those foods, and then eating, yes, more protein, more fat. You still definitely want to get carbohydrate in your diet, but it's no secret. It's going to be hard because you're taking away a lot of really great and healthy foods that are specifically have carbohydrate in them. So you only want to do a low FODMAP protocol for about 6 to 8 weeks. That's because you're taking out foods that help proliferate and feed gut bacteria, specifically prebiotics. And so you're going to inhibit gut function overall if you do that too long. And so it's a very specific protocol you want to be on. 6 weeks, you want to start introducing foods, introducing foods in each of the FODMAP categories individually, seeing how you do, seeing what foods do cause reactions, seeing what foods don't cause reactions. So while you're following the low FODMAP approach, you can maybe start with, you know, an apple and add an apple in and see how it goes. And then if you don't have a reaction, you wait a few days and you add something else in. And so it's, you know, it is, that's why it's great to do it with a physician. And it's, or, you know, a practitioner, somebody who kind of knows the protocol, knows how to guide you through it. So, you know, if you, hopefully you haven't been doing this too long term and you do have some guidance and you do have some sort of plan. If you do have, you know, some sort of plan and you do plan on adding stuff back in and figuring out what does work for you and maybe eventually getting a SIBO test done, which I think would be awesome for you. Because in essence, that's sort of the root cause here, is some sort of dysbiosis or overgrowth of bacteria in the gut that's highly correlated with IBS. And so not that expensive. You can do a simple breath test. I would highly recommend doing that. And start to, if you've been doing the FODMAP thing for a long time, start to introduce some foods back in and see how you do so that you can get your carbohydrates up. But if you're like, you just started this, then it may be worth kind of playing with your macronutrient ratio, being really vigilant, trying to get in some of the carbohydrates that are FODMAP friendly or low in FODMAP, and, kind of just, you know, sticking it out, feeling a little eh for a little bit. There is a supplement called beta TCP, and it does help the gallbladder and it helps digestion of fat. It's just got beets in it, which are known to help emulsify fats. And so if you are feeling a little gross because you just feel like you're eating a little too much fat or you're having problems digesting fat, take that beta TCP with your meals. I'll link to it in the show notes. But yeah, I think there's a little bit too much that's unclear here to be able to even really say, you know, if in fact you're doing the right thing and what you can do moving forward and how you should change that. So I just tried to cover it all.
Okay.
Great.
Great.
All right. Question number two is from Jenna. Hi, Stephanie and Noelle. Super fangirl over here, but I'll spare you the raving at Noelle's recent request for questions that quickly get to the point. This is why your question is on the podcast. Thank you, Jenna. I've been experiencing some skin breakouts over the past few months, and I can't figure it out. I've noticed it on my face, mostly on my left side, but also on the right side of my eye and on my cheeks. Not acne exactly, kind of like rosacea, but raised bumps, kind of like a rash, but not itchy. It's always kind of there, but comes and goes in severity. What do you think could be causing this? Here are my details if you want them. I take Nature Thyroid. Okay, I was like, are we missing a Y? Nature Thyroid. I take Nature Thyroid for hypothyroidism, natural progesterone to get my hormones back in line after years on hormonal birth control and under eating, over exercising, etc. My doctor, who I like, also has me taking what I believe to be a ridiculous amount of supplements, but I listen to him because under his care, my thyroid and adrenal issues have really improved. Evening primrose oil, iodine, selenium, vitamin D, B12, multivitamin, and some adrenal herbal supplements, ADHD, and Cytozyme AD from Biotics. I was about to say, is that from Biotics? Daily probiotic, and I think that's it. Could any of these things be causing it? I eat mostly paleo-ish, gluten-free, but some non-gluten-containing grains, maybe 2 alcohol drinks a week, but I'm no longer restricting at all. I love dark chocolate and have it a little daily. I have low stress, but busy jobs. Periods are normal. I do some workouts 5 to 6 days a week. Sleep is good, 7 to 8. Make my own skincare products, so the topical stuff is taken care of. My allergist, dermatologist, and probably primary doc haven't been able to help me. Maybe you can.
Well, I have some ideas.
I bet it's you so do. Funny.
As Noelle was reading through the list, I was like, well, that.
Yeah,
okay,
I know.
That.
I know.
That. That, unfortunately, you know, everybody is different. Most of the things on your list, could actually be the problem of things that you're taking. And I'm not saying that they necessarily are, you know, they could also not be, right? It could be the case that there's some sort of, allergen in your environment, or maybe you have some sort of gut issue. Like, these are all possibilities. I will talk briefly about, you know, some of this stuff, and if any of it resonates with you, then you might want to try pulling it out of your supplement regimen and seeing if it helps. So reading down the list, under eating, over exercising, etc. Okay, so this can cause acne by causing conditions of stress, by depriving the body of carbohydrates, which it needs to lubricate the skin. It can cause problems, but you wouldn't typically see acne show up on the cheeks and by the eyes when this is the case. More often than not, when women struggle with this, the acne would show up closer to the mouth because that would signal a hormone imbalance. You're taking natural progesterone. This was the first thing you said and the first flag that I saw, because, again, for some people, progesterone can really help with the skin, but I've also seen it all over the place being a problem and aggravating the skin. And this is in part because estrogen is pretty necessary. It's very helpful for the quality of women's skin. It's so important. It helps keep testosterone in check, which prevents acne and, you know, aggravated growth cycles in the skin. Estrogen is really important. And if you're taking progesterone without estrogen, okay, so if you're under eating and over exercising, my guess is both your estrogen and progesterone levels have dropped. Now you're on the birth control pill, and I don't know which one, and I don't know what that was like for you or how I was coming off of it, but I would guess that both estrogen and progesterone would need some help coming off of it. And if you're taking just progesterone and you've been taking it for years, that could be upsetting, you know, progesterone, estrogen, testosterone balance, and causing your skin to be a little bit irritated, capable of being more irritated. I will also say it's not uncommon for people to see one side of their face be more problematic than the other. And I would encourage you to not panic about finding the cause. because I have done that many times in my life. And I actually think it's pretty arbitrary. You know, I don't think it has much to do with like how clean your pillowcases are. You know, all over the internet, they'll tell you like change your pillowcases. Like that's going to make your acne go away. It's not. It's definitely not. Like that could maybe play a small role, but I don't think so. Like if you have a filthy pillowcase, sure. But I much more think that the acne and the irritation of the skin comes from elsewhere. Okay, moving on. Thyroid. Thyroid medication can be very helpful for your skin. Should be. I have also seen it when it's not. So that's possible. I don't have anything negative to say about evening primrose oil. A lot of people think it does really great things. I have written blog posts about it doing great things. I personally never saw a difference in my skin when I took it. I know other people who don't. So I don't think it's negative, but there could, you know, it could maybe not be super helping. It's good that you're taking both iodine and selenium. High doses of iodine can be problematic. It's important that you have those in good balance. I don't know what your dosages are, but I would just, I'm sure that your doctor has that in mind, but I wouldn't want to have the iodine too much higher than the selenium. You know, just a kelp capsule or two should really be fine. Okay. Vitamin D, very good. Although it's also important to make sure that you're getting vitamin A, whether that's from, you know, eating liver or lots of eggs. I guess there's some vitamin A in eggs. or getting outside on a daily basis. Getting some, wait, that's your D. you need A to balance with your vitamin D. So I would try to be sure to make sure that I'm getting that in my diet. Lastly, maybe vitamin B12 can actually, when I eat foods that are high in B12, I get acne. And this weekend when I was in Paris and like, you know, trying to eat well, but not display how weird my eating habits are and like sneaking cans of tuna here and there. I break out every single time I have a can of tuna. And it's not the can because it doesn't happen when I eat other canned fish, but it's, you know, it's high in B12 and other stuff. Anyway, this is solid science that vitamin B12 can cause inflammation in the skin. This is because bacteria in the skin produce their own, but when you consume vitamin B12, they have no need to, and they end up producing something that's inflammatory instead. So if you're taking a high dose B12, that could also be a problem. I'm not saying it is, but it's possible that it's aggravating. Adrenal support supplements, I'll just let it go. I'm not a huge fan of them. Personally, I'm wary of herbal stuff, but if it feels good, I think that's probably fine. Probiotics should probably be fine. There could be so many other, there could be some topical stuff going on that you could help yourself with, you know, trying to not overexpose your skin to harsh stuff, to hot water. Don't over dry your skin, that sort of stuff. Keeping it nice and moisturized. I'm sure that you follow those kinds of protocols, especially if you're making your own skincare products. So I hope that helps maybe a little bit. Skin conditions are complicated. I'm sure Noelle has some other perspectives because, again, we could talk about this for a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think there's like two different. I don't have anything additional to say. I would say, you know, did this happen when he gave you all of these supplements to take? And you know, of course, like the B12 sticks out to me, whatever's in the multivitamin, I'm not totally sure. Like, I definitely want you to be healthy and to, you know, support your adrenals and to continue on with that stuff. But, there should be a clear and concise kind of end date for some of these. And so I would encourage you to maybe talk with your doctor and say, hey, can we, you know, start to talk about times where I could maybe phase off of some of these specific herbal supplements that are to you know, help adrenal support and that sort of thing. Stress is huge. You know, that's my main thing that I think about is stress. If you've had any sort of unexplained, just kind of not unexplained, but, kind of, well, if you've had unexplained kind of breakouts or whatever, and you've had this sort of maybe slow building stress that kind of has finally hit a breaking point, and I think we're kind of seeing that because your adrenals are, have been affected, I would say that that could be a big cause. So maybe, you know, just kind of seeing where it started and recording that and kind of evaluating what was going on at that time or what happened before that, you know, in the months prior to that, that would be helpful. I don't know if it happened when you stopped restricting. I love that you did stop restricting, but at some point you might have brought something into your diet that has led to a reaction that is manifested as, you know, a breakout or some sort of rash on your face. And so I hate to, you know, do this to you, but chocolate could be, you know, one of those things.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be the chocolate stealer, but it's just something worth experimenting with. If there's a specific food like that, that now you're eating more regularly. And so you get to take that information now, kind of having the freedom to eat all the things that you want to eat and all the stuff, you know, or eating within, you know, not with the dieting mentality. Now you get to take this feedback and say, okay, my body's responding in a specific way. I'm going to choose to take that food out and find other things to eat instead, you know, that I enjoy, that bring me happiness and, you know, whatever. And, you know, in terms of maybe sweetness or something. And I'm going to, you know, move forward with seeing if that helps resolve things. If it doesn't, you know, cool. But if it does, then we've kind of found our culprit. So taking it out, especially if you're doing it, like eating it daily, I think could potentially resolve some issues. Again, that's where my mind goes, is stress, number one, foods. So like what food could potentially be causing this sort of reaction? Chocolate is one of them. Dairy is another really popular one. And then gluten. So if you have increased any sort of dairy, cheeses, yogurt, that could be a big deal as well. And then the gut, what is going on with the gut? So if you have any sort of compromised gut situation happening, I would say that it could potentially lead to some sort of like the skin issues that you've described. And so doing everything that you can do to promote healthy gut function is going to be helpful. I'm sure your doctor has you on some sort of probiotic you're on a daily probiotic. But it might be worth including in some probiotic foods and seeing if that kind of helps. You had a recommendation about, a topical probiotic.
Yeah, Probiotic Action. I think they do a really great stuff. There is a discount link at paleoforman.com/acne if you want to go grab it.
Okay.
Or a code. Yeah.
I will link to it in the show notes. Okay. Cool. That's all I got. So last question is from Joelle. Stephanie Noel. I am a mom of three kids, wife of a CrossFit athlete, and a multiple sclerosis warrior. I've read research and spent months following the autoimmune protocol without much luck. On top of MS, I suffer from anxiety and amenorrhea. My husband and I have been paleo for almost 3 years. He has seen huge improvements in his health, but I've seen none. Question, what are the connections between the paleo diet and mental health? Why should this help? I have been following a paleo diet for over 2 years and have not seen an improvement in my anxiety. Thanks for your awesome podcast. It makes me smile.
Wow. There's a lot there. So
this is a very big question, which I think is good because we could talk about a lot of things, but I do want to mention that this isn't really enough for us. Well, you could probably talk about that too, but we don't know enough here to be able to really say like, this is why paleo is not working for you. So maybe we just talk, you know, mainly about the connection between.
Right. Address the question she posed. Totally valid. And also, Noelle and I are not mental health experts. I have struggled with generalized anxiety disorder, and I'm sure Noelle has had her own things. And I've done some reading, but, you know, I don't have any formal training in any of this stuff. There's a few different theories and sets of ideas that float around about, you know, causes of mental health issues. There are so many. There's so many. But specifically with paleo, you know, most people will tell you that anxiety, most people in the paleo sphere will tell you that anxiety is a gut issue. They'll tell you that if you have inflammation in your gut, that will spread to your brain, and then your neurons will not, you will either not have the right balance of neurotransmitters, or your neurons will not receive the signals from neurotransmitters as well as they might otherwise because of inflammation. Now, this could be a real thing. It sounds like your MS is not being remediated by paleo. Many people find that it is. So I am wondering if you perhaps have a gut issue that hasn't been fixed yet. And maybe, I don't know if you've tried an autoimmune protocol. I don't know if you've read about Dr. Terry Walls's work. You know, she's a woman who really overcame MS. She was bedbound in a wheelchair constantly, reclining wheelchair, bedbound, and ate her way out of it. And I'm not, I don't say that to trivialize the experiences of people who have a harder time with MS, because I am sure there are many. But it may be worth reading about what she does. It may be worth looking into autoimmune protocols, you know, or Dr. Sarah Ballantyne's The Paleo Approach could be really helpful. Because if there is an underlying gut condition that causes both the MS and the anxiety, then that would be the area, you know, on which I would focus if I were you. Now, there's a whole lot of other stuff, of course, that can contribute to anxiety. The adrenal system, you know, a hyperactive thyroid system, electrolyte imbalance, as was my case. Kidney issues, liver issues. If things go wrong in the body, the brain can often be affected. And I don't just mean psychologically, I mean physically, you know, because it is a very chemical place, the brain. And so I don't want to say, I can't say necessarily if any of those things, you know, are relevant for you. And that's not quite the question you're asking. I think in large part, you know, paleo is helpful for people with mental health issues because A, it heals the gut. B, it is anti-inflammatory, which really helps cool down the brain. C, people tend to get good doses of protein, you know, healthful protein, and plenty of, you know, omega-3 fats. They cut out the omega-6s. So that's good for supporting, you know, a proper immune system and keeping inflammation levels healthy. Now, people also exercise often when they're on paleo, and that will help, you know, cause the body to secrete serotonin and dopamine. And so those are some reasons, you know, paleo has been said to help. It can help people detox, you know, it can help support the liver. If you're eating plenty of liver, for example, or eggs or what have you, lots of high quality animal products, leafy greens and the like. By the way, Terry Walls is a huge fan of big plates, heaping plates of leafy greens. almost as big as the ones I eat when they don't make me nauseous. Anyway, oh. Yeah, still happening. Oh, it's fine. Gosh. Yeah, not as hard as dealing with anxiety and MS. So eating those things, you know, will help the liver, which can help get heavy metals out of your body if they're there, and clean up the brain a little bit. And of course, we also have genetic dispositions to this, or epigenetic. You know, these things get a little bit wired into us. Most people tend to be one way or the other, you know, to lean a little bit more towards anxiety or more towards depression. And I think that depends on whether our brain states tend to be inhibited or excitatory, because those are two broad categories of neurotransmitters that exist in our brain. Some uptick the brain's activity and some downtick. And when that gets out of balance, I think is, you know, a pretty significant problem. So I'm not sure, you know, I don't know if I can give anything to recommend here for anxiety. You know, people talk about magnesium all the time. And if you happen to be magnesium deficient, it's super important. People also on paleo tend to be pretty low in magnesium because some of the most abundant places to get magnesium are grains. And legumes and the like. So quinoa, for example, is pretty high in magnesium. So a magnesium supplement could be called for. Getting sun exposure, you know, vitamin D never hurts. And I also recommend maybe taking a valerian root or a tryptophan before you go to sleep at night. That can help boost your serotonin production. I'm not saying that could be an answer for you, but so far as supplemental remedies go for anxiety, I think those are probably your best bets if you're looking for something to help you while you try to figure this out. And of course, psychologists matter. But as I say so many times over and over again on this podcast, I think mental health should be tackled from both angles, psychologically and physically. So patience and stuff. Yeah.
So I'm going to just quickly say, if you have MS and you're suffering from anxiety and you're suffering from amenorrhea and you haven't seen any improvements, please consider going to a functional medicine practitioner, maybe somebody who specializes in autoimmune disorders like MS, who can guide you and give you a more intense, specific treatment. The book that Terry Walls has is called The Walls Protocol. We will link to it in the show notes. Like Steph said, she had MS. And I believe a lot of the premise of the book was, yeah, eating was great, but it wasn't until I started doing A, B, and C, which technically ends up being like a lot of different specific supplements and stuff like that, and really focused on nutrient density overall, not just what can I exclude, but now what should I be including. That's when literally her life changed and things turned a corner. So she's actually doing studies on this and is like taking this to the more conventional side of, you know, the medical system, which is super incredible and amazing. Highly recommend you get her book. She's also been on a couple podcasts. I know she's been on Rob Wolf's The Paleo Solution. It would definitely be worth listening to. But I think, you know, when we talk about paleo isn't working or I'm not seeing improvements, we've really got to remove the no grains, legumes, and dairy thing and transition that into what are the things that we need to start including. And so how can we get the most, you know, nutrient density or up our nutrient density as much as possible, as opposed to just making sure we're eating vegetables and meats. When we're talking about mental health and anxiety, I think it's important to kind of unpack this because it is a little confusing. And I feel like, you know, mental health is it's just such a huge deal. It's definitely not something we take lightly, nor is it something we claim to be experts in. But it affects so many people. And it's something that, you know, Steph and I have dealt with. It's something plenty of my family members have dealt with. And depression is really, it's kind of... It's becoming a societal issue. You know, it's estimated that it's going to be the second leading cause of disability worldwide by 2020, which just around the corner here. So, you know, as antidepressants are more and more, you know, widely being prescribed, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing or that they're ineffective. At the same time, depression continues to rise and these mental health disorders continue to rise. So there's something... you know, there's a much bigger picture here. There's something more. There's multiple root causes that are changing the face of our society's mental health. So, why does paleo help mental health? This is a loaded question. I think that Stephanie touched on a lot of good things. I think,
but insufficiently.
Okay, I just think it's kind of important because I think it's important to kind of unpack this maybe just a little bit further. So when we're talking, so number one, Stephanie said this, it reduces inflammation. Okay, so what, like, that's a great thing to say, but what does that actually mean? You know, a lot of people are like, well, okay. So by removing inflammatory foods, so we're talking about refined sugar. We're talking about industrial seed oils, which are high in omega-6s. We're talking about trans fats, and we're talking about potential gut irritants, foods that you may be allergic to, foods that have anti-nutrients, and then adding in nutrient-dense, anti-inflammatory foods like fruits and vegetables and fatty cold water fish, we're changing the whole balance of the body. So inflammation is not inherently a bad thing. It's a normal response to a stressor. But if it goes on too long and it becomes systemic inflammation, it can be a big problem that can cause a lot of further complications and issues, especially when we're talking about inflammation in the gut. And I think that because you have already dealt with some sort of autoimmune condition, you know, we know of one. We know that you also have amenorrhea. We also know that you're dealing with anxiety. I think it's safe to say that something in your gut is off. Okay, so specifically, when we're talking about mental health, studies have found that inflammation is associated with different brain functions and a reduction in the production of neurons. But, you know, let's take a look at the bigger picture. So if we're removing a lot of these things that inhibit gut health and the proliferation and growth of these good gut bacteria, we talked about that a few episodes ago, just how important the microbiome is and all all the bacteria are that live in your gut. So if we're removing all of these foods that kind of inhibit that, and we're eating foods that help the gut, you know, proliferate, help our gut bacteria proliferate. That is not a fun word. Then like our whole physiology is going to hopefully function more optimally. And this is because the gut microbiome regulates mood and neurological function. This is what we're finding now in the research. It's not just something that, you know, people, you know, are saying. And serotonin, yeah, it's 90% of it is actually made in your digestive tract. So we have to remove the idea that somehow digestion is separate from brain health. You know, this is why we're so passionate about a holistic approach. It is all, you know, intertwined. Yes, anxiety and depression can be caused by many different things, but they also can be caused by a lot of the same things when we're talking about struggles and issues. So, the gut is also responsible for breaking down and absorbing really important key nutrients that are important for good brain health. So specifically, omega-3 fatty acids, which is why we're a huge proponent of cold water, fatty fish. We want you to get the DHA and the EPA, not just an ALA, which is really just poorly absorbed and virtually, you know, somewhat ineffective. Cholesterol. So eggs, I think I recommend eggs every single podcast. B vitamins, we're talking about high quality, absorbable forms of B vitamins that you can find in grass-fed meats, in liver, and in eggs. And, you know, important key vitamins here, choline, B1, B6, B12, B9, which is folate. You know, B9 is so important for pregnant women. Why? Because it helps prevent neural tube defects, which is basically B9 is needed for the baby's brain to be healthy and form. So please eat lots of leafy greens. You know, that's one of the things that hopefully you're eating more on a paleo diet. Please know that taking synthetic forms of some of these vitamins is not the same whatsoever. You cannot just take a multivitamin. And this is something that I've been banging my head against the wall about, but you can't just take a multivitamin and expect to have the same result and the same balance in your physiology. Specifically, when we're talking about B9, folic acid, which is the synthetic form of B9, does not operate or act the same at all as a methylated folate, as folate that you'll find in leafy greens. So if you're pregnant, please eat lots of leafy greens, but also do not take a folic acid supplement and instead take a supplement that has a methylated folate. And then other stuff for the brain. Iron is really, you want to have, again, we can get this in high quality grass-fed meats. And then fat. So fat is great brain food. It's great for regulating mood and helping your brain respond to stress. All of those reasons that I just talked about, were non-existent from my diet when I was in college. And I directly correlate that to a lot of the heightened depression and anxiety that I had. Now, I'm not, I don't think that clinically, I was never diagnosed with depression or anxiety, but my moods were definitely more unstable. And I definitely struggled a lot specifically with body image and the thoughts and feelings about myself and, you know, my safety and how I existed in the world. And I will say it wasn't until I just finally let go of the diet mentality and started eating fat in sufficient quantities and started eating grass-fed red meats because I did paleo for a few years and actually did not eat any sort of, I didn't eat from farms. I didn't eat grass-fed meats. I was just kind of eating chicken and broccoli and trying to like eat as little coconut oil as possible or eat as little fat as possible. Still getting, you know, light forms of things. Once I finally threw that to the wayside, I mean, my whole mental health changed. And when I say mental health, that doesn't mean that things were resolved completely. Of course, I still struggle with anxiety. Hello, this past weekend was just a huge episode, but it allowed me to have a sense of stability. I just can't, it's hard for me to express sufficiently, but it was like, you know, my mental headspace was less busy and I felt a little bit more grounded. So when I started to buy a lot of the foods about 5 years ago from local farms, I said, I'm just going to go for it. We're going to do more grass-fed meats and I'm going to go for the liver. I'm going to eat eggs. We're going to go for the pasture-raised eggs. And we changed that whole, you know, and I said, I'm going to eat as much fat as my body wants. That changed everything for me. Another thing to just quickly, like, you know, mention, because I think it's important here, antibiotics have been found to raise long-term risk of depression. So if we, you know, if we wipe out our good gut bacteria with antibiotics, and then we continue to worsen the problem with foods that are known to inhibit proper gut function and inhibit, you know, good gut bacteria growth. I mean, this is how most Americans are living. This is how most people are living, right? We take an antibiotics, we get something that's fine. You know, lots of people go through a lot of rounds of antibiotics. They're not taking probiotics. They're not eating probiotic foods. And then they're doing things in their daily life that are proliferating the problem, that are making the problem, like continuing to perpetuate the issue, which is eating, you know, maybe higher processed, refined foods, not eating a lot of fats, not eating a lot of high quality fats, not eating a lot of grass-fed meats or cholesterol or, you know, that whole situation, I think, you know, is part of the mental health problem that we're experiencing. It's definitely not only part of it. I think there's a lot that has to do with how we operate as a society now and how we are so separated from each other and so into our, and even just how we operate online. But I think that that's a big part of it. And it's directly impacting our brain health and specifically our mental and emotional health. So, you know, gut disorders and mental disorders, they do go hand in hand. And this is why half of all IBS patients have mood disorders. And actually, one study found that the rate of generalized anxiety disorders, so things like chronic worrying and restlessness and fatigue and all that, was 5 times higher, as high as the rate in the general population among IBS patients. So, you know, and also in literature, we've seen a lot of like certain autoimmune conditions like celiac disease is associated with mood disorders like anxiety. And so we can't separate the two. So that's how the paleo diet can hopefully help mental health. But I think that, you know, when it comes to your question, Joelle, the MS and the anxiety are kind of, to me, they definitely are working hand in hand here. And I think we can hopefully solve the issue together by doing all those things that we talked about. Increasing your nutrient density, hopefully working with a practitioner, upping certain nutrients that may be out of balance. I think magnesium would definitely be safe to say. Fat soluble vitamins, absolutely. All of those things that we know improve brain health and mood and all the things, the nutrients that are needed. Please consider working with somebody professionally with all that, because that's going to take so much off of your shoulders. So much. It's so stressful. to have to come up with, you know, solutions and protocols and plans on your own, especially when you just don't have any experience or know-how. So yes, read the Walls Protocol, and hopefully you can, there's probably, I'm sure there's some resources in there to help you know how to move forward, and then even how to find a professional, like a practitioner to work with. I'm sorry. We are over time again, but that was super important. Do you have anything else to add?
No.
Wonderful. For more from me, go to coconutsandkettlebells.com. More from Steffi, go to paleoforwomen.com. For our Instagram, where we're there and chit-chatting and hanging out, follow us at Paleo Women Podcast. We will talk to you next week.